The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. School is now in session. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Mark Durkin.
Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone.
Well, good evening and thank you for joining us here in Education Nation. I am Headmaster and host Rebecca Hagstrom, and it's a privilege to join you every Saturday evening here on AM 1280 The Patriot. And of course, I am joined in studio once again by the producer of Education Nation and my co-host, Mark Durkin.
And a happy summer season to you, Rebecca.
Yes,
it's going fast, isn't it?
It is. It is. But, you know, our Minnesota summers, you just can't beat them.
Nope, you can't. Even if you have to read outside, pull out the chair, soak in the vitamin
Anything.
D.
Absolutely.
It has been beautiful.
Yes, it sure has. Well, I'm excited about the topic of our show today, Mark.
Yes.
For more than 150 years, the Blaine Amendments, which now exist in 37 state constitutions, I should say, have prohibited the use of government funding to benefit religious schools and other organizations. And in June, a U.S. Supreme Court ruling in favor of three plaintiffs in the state of Montana may reverse the bias against religious persons seeking scholarship money for enrollment at the school of their choice.
Yeah, and specifically, the Supreme Court ruled that Montana had violated the plaintiff's right under the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. And this ruling reiterates the Constitution's protections for religious families against unequal treatment and against laws that impose special disabilities on the basis of religious status. Mm-hmm. Well, joining us in the studio to discuss the landmark SCOTUS ruling in Espinoza versus the Montana Department of Revenue is attorney Anthony Sanders. And Mr. Sanders is a senior attorney and the current director of the Center for Judicial Engagement. And he engages the public about the proper role of judges in enforcing constitutional limits on the size and scope of government. And as a senior attorney, Anthony, he litigates cutting-edge constitutional cases protecting economic liberty, private property, freedom of speech, and other individual liberties in both federal and state courts across the country.
That's right. Very qualified attorney.
Yes.
One area of Anthony's expertise is on using state constitutions to protect individual rights. He's litigated several cases in various state courts on state constitutional protections. He has also written several law review articles on state constitutional law. Back in January, Anthony had the privilege of being present at the U.S. Supreme Court for oral arguments in the Espinoza case, and he's here to discuss how the case ruling will help overturn more than 150 years of legalized bigotry against religious liberties. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us here again on Education Nation.
Thank you for having me, Rebecca. It's wonderful to be back.
Yes. All right. Wonderful. Well, Anthony, we had you on the program back in February to discuss the specifics surrounding this case. And we invite our listeners to actually go back and revisit episodes number 193 and 194 on our podcast at nationmn.org. In an effort to set the context of this ruling, can you take a few moments to highlight the circumstances that brought about this case and why it ultimately made it its way back to the U.S. Supreme Court?
You bet. And I will try to keep this is a complicated case in some ways, but I'll try to keep it brief for your listeners. And if they want all the details, of course, they can go back to those episodes.
Yeah.
So this was a lawsuit brought by my organization, the Institute for Justice, by a few of my colleagues who challenged it actually began as a challenge to a kind of a bureaucratic administrative barrier. It was a technically a rule that was issued by the State Department of Revenue, a barrier to a school choice program that had been enacted by the state legislature. So the state of Montana, its legislature, enacted a school choice program. It was a relatively modest program that allowed people, both individuals and entities, to give a contribution to a private scholarship organization and get a tax credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the organization, in turn, would use the funds as a scholarship that a parent could take and then use that in turn at a private school of their choice, both religious and non-religious, for their children. So it was a school choice program in that the money does not go directly to the school. The money goes to a parent who then has the choice as to where they educate their child.
Right. And I was just going to add really quickly here, just insert, sorry, please, I want you to continue, but this is the exact same type of program that has been tried here in Minnesota, I think three different times. It's been brought before the legislature, and it has all three times not made it into final law on the governor's desk, yes. But it's the same plan.
That's exactly right. And it's been enacted in Montana and a few other states. It's a slightly different than the program where that you usually hear about, a voucher program where the money goes directly from the state treasury to a parent who then chooses the school of their choice. But the idea and the two types of programs is the same. It is not government directly funding churches or religious schools or non-religious schools. It is the government giving parents additional options on where they want to send their children.
Right, right.
So
this
was the program in Montana. And then, excuse me, the Department of Revenue in Montana said, you know, we don't think this program is constitutional under the state constitution. And that's this thing called a Blaine Amendment that we talked about in the earlier programs,
right.
Because the money goes to religious schools. So they say if you enacted a program that only went to non-religious, secular, private schools, that would be okay. But because it can go to a religious school, we can't allow that. And so we're just gonna have the program be able to go to non-religious schools. Our argument was that actually doesn't, that's a misreading of the state constitution. You might read it to say that actually it doesn't mean that. But in any case, if it does mean that, it violates the First Amendment's free exercise clause.
Right. Correct.
The rule actually was found to be invalid under state law, and that the Blaine Amendment didn't. So our first argument didn't mean that the program was unconstitutional by the trial court. And so that went to the Montana Supreme Court, and the Montana Supreme Court took the more expansive reading of the state constitution that, the legislature could provide funds just to private secular schools, but because it provided them to religious schools, that it would be unconstitutional. And then for kind of technical reasons, state technical reasons of administrative law, said that the rule was invalid. So that meant that we had a ruling from a state Supreme Court saying that a program couldn't include religious schools because of one of these Blaine Amendments. So that teed up the issue for us to appeal to the United States Supreme Court to address this free exercise question.
Right.
I should add, the Montana Supreme Court also, it was very short analysis, but also said that it was okay under the free exercise clause.
Interesting. The Montana Supreme Court said that?
Yes, in about two sentences.
Okay.
It did say that, and it was that ruling, actually, that was what was appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Okay, right.
Right. And of course, all of this, you know, the complaint that comes against it, obviously, is just, you know, the amount of money that's changing hands. Just to provide a little more context, Anthony, was there a certain amount that individuals and businesses could contribute towards this private scholarship organization? Was there a cap set on that?
The actual tax credit was up to $150.
Yeah. Just $150. Okay.
And then the scholarships that went to the parents was considerably more than that.
Right.
But
that
was the amount. And it was capped, I think, at like $3 million overall.
Okay.
Could be used in a year. And then there was different years that different amounts would apply. And it was enacted for a few years. But that's we're talking that the modest amount of the program is $150, that instead of sending your check to the state treasury, you send it to the scholarship organization.
Sure. Okay. And this process of paving the way here has been going on for quite a while. There were two other U.S. Supreme Court cases that helped in handing this ruling down from the Espinoza case. Let's just recap a little bit and share with our listeners the specific rulings that came from the 2002 Zelman versus Simmons-Harris case. And also, just most recently in 2017, there was the Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia Incorporated versus Comer case. Why were these decisions from these two cases instrumental in the Espinoza case?
Yeah, so let's go through both of those cases.
Yeah.
The 2002 case you mentioned, the Zelman case, which was a case that the Institute for Justice also helped litigate, was about the constitutionality of the Cleveland Voucher Program in Ohio. Now, that was a voucher program, so funds going to from the government to parents who could then use them at the school of their choice.
Mm-hmm.
And that point, it hadn't been established whether that was okay under the Establishment Clause, also in the First Amendment, which prohibits as interpreted against the states, the states from entangling themselves with religion.
Mm-hmm.
The court ruled there that no, that the parents have a choice as to where to send their children, whether to a religious school or of different religions or to a secular school. And so there is not an Establishment Clause problem with that program.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that didn't mean, of course, that any state had to have, instead, and this is still not the law and will never be the law, that a state has to have a school choice program. It's just if a state wants to have this kind of school choice program where the parents make the decision, it can.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward to 2017, this Trinity Lutheran case, this was a case about using recycled tires for playground equipment. Pretty innocuous
right.
type of issue.
Right.
And not exactly a culture war issue.
Right.
And it was the state of Missouri had a rule under its Blaine Amendment, in interpreting its Blaine Amendment, that they couldn't use this recycled tires that they would donate to people with organizations with playgrounds. They couldn't do it for a church. I think it was a church preschool.
Preschool. Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So the court ruled that is unconstitutional under the Free Exercise Clause because you're excluding religious groups simply because they're religious. And there was a footnote in that case that only some of the justices joined, some did not. This often happens when they're saying, I'm going to join your opinion except for footnote 8. I can't do that one. I think this case it was actually footnote 3. But they under this footnote, there was a disagreement under whether this was true for just any kind of religious organization. It would be unconstitutional to exclude them. But the footnote said that you can do this for religious status, or you can't do it, I should say, just based on religious status. But it could be different if you're excluding based on religious use. They didn't define what your religious status, religious use meant, and they just left it. They didn't even say it would be okay for religious use. They just kind of left it at that.
Hmm.
Sure.
So
hmm.
in this case, then, came to the one of the questions, and we can turn to that in a minute, mm-hmm. was whether this is religious status or religious use or whether that matters.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I was not aware of that part of that decision. Huh. Okay. Well, so now fast forward to this particular case, and the Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts is the one who wrote for the majority in the 5-4 decision. And what was the consensus discussed in that majority opinion?
Yeah. So they then take those cases up, Zelman and especially Trinity Lutheran, mm-hmm. and then apply them to this situation where, because of the Montana Supreme Court's ruling, you have a state that says we can give money to private schools, but only to secular, non-religious mm-hmm. private schools.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a distinction based on religious use or religious status under Trinity Lutheran, or does it matter? And then there was another issue that we talk about briefly, which is the impact of this case called Block versus Davy. from 2004. That was about excluding funds going to people going into the ministry. So on the religious use thing, what the court said was, this is an exclusion based on religious status. The Plain Amendment's pretty sweeping. It applies to, you know, anything connect, any kind of school connected to a church. And so it doesn't turn on, you know, what kind of doctrine that is being taught in the school, whether the students are learning, you know, different kind the intensities, you might say, of the religion that they're learning. It just is whether it's connected to a church. And so it's because it's a discrimination based on religious status, it's unconstitutional. Now, that may sound like, well, there could be opportunities for, you know, religious discrimination in the future in school choice programs because you base it on religious status, but it's or religious use. But I think that you'd have to be a really creative legislator to try and do that. So, basically, the exclusion based on Blaine amendments has been, under this court's ruling, has been on religious status in the past, and so it effectively means Blaine amendments can't be used for to prevent a traditional school choice program.
Which is so huge.
It's huge, very big.
It is
huge. How big that is in a minute, but it's very big.
Yeah.
On the other part of this was, there is this case from 2004, Locke versus Davey, where the state of Washington had a program that allowed for, and forgive me, I can't remember the details, but basically allowed for money to go to someone attending a post-secondary study at university, but not if they were, if it was to train as for the clergy, to be a minister, you know, to be a rabbi or what have you.
You can't make this stuff up sometimes.
So what the court said is that it didn't overturn that case. It said that was a very narrow exception. That doesn't apply here. That was for this this type of training that actually has historically, going back to the founding period, has been viewed as just different under by the states, that you could set ministers kind of in a different box than everyone else, including others who are religious in different ways. And so that's a very narrow exception that was okay under Locke, but we're not going to say that applies to, you know, any type of school that happens to be with a religious affiliated organization. And so Locke versus Davey is still good law, but it's really cabined to its facts, that it's someone actually training for the clergy.
Okay.
And so with those two, with the religious use, religious status analysis, and this exclusion of Locke versus Daly, Davey, they said, well, this is discrimination, and it's only okay if you have that kind of discrimination. It's only okay if you have an incredibly important interest. It's called strict scrutiny, and that just didn't apply in this case. The state's, you know, argument is that, well, we don't want to have the state entangle itself too much with religion, partly because we want to protect the religious people from the state's entanglement, kind of an establishment clause argument. But they said, look, that doesn't overcome the free exercise protections.
Correct. Yep.
And so it's unconstitutional.
Great. That's great.
And you are listening to Education Nation here on AM 1280 The Patriot, where tonight our guest is Anthony Sanders. He's a senior attorney and the current director of the Center for Judicial Engagement, discussing with us tonight the Supreme Court's ruling that the Montana Blaine Amendments are unconstitutional, and that will hopefully set a domino effect across the country as families now seek to exercise their First Amendment rights in seeking out the education of their choice through private religious schools or just private schools in general. Well, of course, the Trump administration has been adding comments to this court ruling that came in June, Anthony. In fact, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos said that the decision represents a turning point in the sad and static history of American education, and she's calling on the states to seize the extraordinary opportunity to expand education opportunities. With this ruling, What might the legislative process in individual states look like moving forward in trying to establish public funding for scholarships to private religious schools?
Well, what it does is it takes away the biggest barrier there was to school choice in many states, which was that they were afraid that the state constitution did not allow for school choice programs that included religious schools, which, of course, is the large majority of private schools that are out there. It's important to remember, though, the ruling itself doesn't change a lot immediately.
Sure.
And that's for two different reasons. One is there aren't that many programs already that only included private secular schools. There's a few. There's one in Maine and one in Vermont. The one in Maine, actually, IJ, the Institute of Justice, is currently challenging in the federal courts of appeals. And so we feel pretty good about that case now with Espinoza. But, excuse me. But otherwise, there aren't a lot of programs like that. Also, so 37 states have these provisions we call Blaine Amendments, but a lot of them have already been interpreted to not prevent school choice programs. And so in a lot of states, including arguably Minnesota, it was a little unclear in Minnesota, you could already enact, say, a Milwaukee voucher program like they have in Wisconsin, or the Cleveland one I talked about earlier. You could already have that even with a Blaine Amendment, because the Blaine Amendment was read to not apply to a parent-driven school choice program. And in some states also they said, well, you can't have it with a voucher program, but you could have it with a tax credit program, like in Montana. So some of those states already have school choice, some don't, and they could have enacted it in any case. But there are a number of states, I'd say approximately about 15, where this does really change things, because that was the Blaine Amendment had been interpreted that way in the past to not allow for something akin to a private school choice program that's parent driven. And so those now have that opportunity to enact that type of program. There are a couple states with a Blaine Amendment where the Blaine Amendment is so bad that this ruling doesn't affect them. The most important one is Michigan. We call it a Blaine Amendment, but it's really much more than religious discrimination. It just says you can't have any shape, any form, any tax credit, any voucher going to a private school.
Oh my.
And so Michigan would need to have some other way of overcoming that. Massachusetts, as its clause has been written, has been interpreted, also has a similar problem. So those states are still out of luck. You could still make the argument, as Justice Alito did in his concurrence in Espinoza, that Blaine Amendments are just kind of void from the beginning because of the anti-Catholicism that is inherent in them.
Mm-hmm.
That perhaps could still be an argument that could be made, but realistically, in the short term, both of those states, it doesn't change much. But there are a number of states where it does change. And so now the question is, are the legislatures in those states, or if they can do it at the local level, the school district or city, able to enact school choice programs that then would not have this argument against them that could be brought in court? There may be other arguments, other provisions of the state constitutions that don't have to do with religion that could be made, but this has been the big one that's been preventing.
Mm-hmm. And when we think about what other hurdles might still exist for individual states in establishing scholarships for religious schools, really it comes down, I'm guessing, then to just having the wherewithal to have some legislators that are willing to put forth legislation in favor of these types of tax credit funding. Is that right, or are there other hurdles that I'm not thinking of?
There are other hurdles, but the big hurdle in getting a school choice program enacted, isn't a constitutional hurdle.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a hurdle of the legislative process.
That's what I thought.
And to getting that coalition to recognize that school choice is something that's good for everyone, except arguably for the teachers union. And so they should, legislators and parents and those who want more choice in education should come together to push for these programs.
Mm-hmm. You know, one concern always, too, is that, you know, when a policy ends up in the wrong hands of government, you know, Adam Unikowski, he argued for the Montana Department of Revenue. He said back in January that the state's constitution, no aid clause, actually protects religious freedom from governmental interference. And, of course, the teachers' unions, they chimed in. Randy Weingarten, who's the president of the American Federation of Teachers, she called the ruling a seismic shock that threatens both public education and religious liberty. You had the opportunity to listen to the arguments in the case. If you could just briefly provide context to the assertion that's put forth by Mr. Unikowski, and is there a legitimate concern that this ruling could lead to religious schools at some point having to face pressure to compromise when receiving funds? Well, I know that the schools themselves aren't receiving the funds from the government, but given that they'll be coming from people, could there ever be a chance where they would be in a position being pressured to compromise?
Yes, and this is a principled objection to school choice programs that we actually hear from libertarians such as ourselves.
Yes.
We're a libertarian organization, and sometimes those consider themselves more libertarian than us will say, well, you're asking for government dollars going to private groups, and that's just going to inevitably mean that they're going to be dominated by the government's wishes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's also the objection that, you know, to protect one of the reasons for the Establishment Clause in the first place is to protect religions from the government, because once the government becomes entangled with religious groups, it's going to try to control those religious groups, and you never know who's going to be in charge of the government in the future. Those are both, as I said, principled objections. We don't agree with them. The religious one we've already talked about to some extent, because you know, at the end of the day, there still is an establishment clause and state establishment clauses that protect for you know say the government running a church or the government putting lots of strings on those funds school choice programs. We always advocate at IJ that you should have a school choice program, but then you should leave it up to the parents and the schools to set their own rules.
Right.
There is that danger about creeping, government authority and regulation over the schools when it has those types of programs.
Yep. But, I got to cut you off, no. Anthony. I'm so sorry, but we are literally down to about 15 seconds here of our show.
No problem.
Your information has been so helpful, and what a wonderful win. We are celebrating with you. Thank you for all your hard work on behalf of religious freedom in America. And thank you to Mark, and thank you to our listeners. Good night.